This is Behind the Docs, the show that shines a spotlight on the people shaping how we understand and use technology. In each episode, we pull back the curtain to talk about what it's really like to create the docs we all rely on. Let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Behind the Docs. I'm really excited for today's conversation because we are talking to one of the first friends outside of Heretto that I made in the technical communication world, and that is Randy Knapp. And I cannot tell you how amazing. I'll give a little bit of background, I think is appropriate. It was my first conference. I had never been to a TechCom conference before. It was Convex in Tucson, Arizona, and I was riding down the elevator to go to the happy hour, and I was really, really nervous. And Randy looked at me and said, "I like your hair." And I said, "Thanks so much." Because if you don't know, I have pink hair. We just got to talking in the elevator, and then it turned out we were both walking into the same conference. And then I pretty much attached myself to Randy the whole entire time. And it was just such a lovely friendship that bloomed out of this one moment in an elevator. And I truly will never forget it.
Oh, that's so sweet. And you know, if I were to retell that story, I think the only thing I would change in that is to say that. And then I glommed on to you and I just followed you throughout the conference going, "Oh, look, I have a special friend."
Well, it sounds to me like we both did the exact same thing. So it was kismet. We were both destined to hang out, and it was awesome. I mean, we had a great time, and it was really fun. So I guess one thing I actually don't know that we didn't talk about at that conference was how you ended up in TechCom. So would you give us a little bit of background as to how you got here?
Sure. I had kind of kicked around the ranks a lot doing various and sundry things, and found myself working in a lot of manufacturing companies. And they, most of my career is going to be, oh, they were really desperate for someone to do some sort of activity. And they were like, "Well, here, why don't you try it?" And it was actually maintaining bills of material, and super exciting. But then really just understanding, learning how manufacturing worked and subassemblies and what rolls into what. And you know, now looking back at it, okay, just a little, you know, spoiler alert, it's very much like structured content. It's an indented bill of material. So time goes on, and someone offered me a job doing parts catalogs, and I'm like, "What's a parts catalog?" And they told me, and I was like, "Okay, sure, sounds like bill of material thing." So that led to that, did that for a while. Couple months, not my jam. You know, it was interesting, but you have to be prepared to spend, you know, 8 hours wondering if there are six washers or five washers on that assembly. And I was like, as much as I love a mystery, that one just took a little too long. And again, they were kind of looking for someone to work with this new technology that was called SGML, and it was being input into a program called Epic Editor, which was owned by Arbortext. So this is, let's just say it's a long time ago. And from there, I started doing input for other writers. And then I started writing because, you know, I could see stuff that they were doing. And I was like, "Oh yeah, I could do this. This isn't, I can use a wrench. Sure, I get it." And I then moved on to other writing gigs as a tech writer and a trainer, because I was training other writers in structured content. And most of the writers that I was working with were like ex-mechanics or technicians. So you're kind of helping them become writers. And then they were training me to become, you know, more of a technician. So it was kind of a cool thing. And it was a lot of fun, absolutely. And then more and more time went on, and, you know, kind of worked my way through a lot of other roles, still within the tech writing realm somewhere. And my current job is working at Echo Incorporated. We make the lawn and garden equipment and the outdoor power equipment division. And I'm the manager of technical publications here. And I have a team of 8 people. And we are doing, this will really resonate. All of our content is being done in unstructured frame. Okay, so Right. So part of my job, my assignment is to look at what the future technology is. And we are owned by a parent company in Japan, and they too have actually started making steps toward a data journey. And turns out they don't know as much about data maybe as they should before, going too far down that road. So we're doing that together. And it's pretty interesting to work with an international team and have, conversations basically once a week and for about an hour, hour and a half, and try to pull something like this off. But so far so good. The team's really motivated, got a solid core team, and we're getting support from management here. Mostly, I think, because nobody really understands it. So it's like, don't worry, it'll save us money in the long run.
Oh my gosh, so many questions coming out of that, like one answer for myself. But I'm going to stay with what we're talking about now or what you were just talking about. So, you are talking to a group of people who don't know about structured content or technical writing or DITA, and they're learning. How do you frame that conversation? What do you say to them that makes it click for them?
Depending on the level within the organization. So when I was talking to the executive team about it, it was all about labor savings, all of the automation that we could build in the automated workflows. Because when you're dealing with this unstructured environment with no file management other than people, and so we have a tremendous amount of inefficiencies. So it was like, great, that checked all their boxes, and there's a lot. One of the examples is how we have to process our translations has 31 steps to
Oh my
process them
gosh.
out and process them in. And I was like, well, if we had a CMS, we could limit our activity to three. So I was like, okay, that's significant, even if everything took a minute, right? So in talking to the team, that's a little bit, that was a little bit more challenging because change is hard, especially because they've had absolutely no change, including in their leadership. It's been a long time. So I was a new leader coming in with all these crazy ideas. But it was like, well, do you want to work harder or do you want to work smarter? Because I can make it so you have less work to do to make these things happen. Right. So I think it was really kind of appealing to them on the getting rid of that over processing, the things that really annoy them. We started the conversation with, for all the teams, is what's your pain point? Let's identify the problem to solve. And it's like, let me show you how a better tool can solve this problem. And that's been successful so far. But
Awesome.
we don't have any budget yet. We don't have a Yeah, we don't have the technology, but we've got a lot of support for the conversation, so.
That's half the battle, right? That's half the battle. Okay, so now going back to I still have questions, but my first question that popped up while you were talking did you ever see yourself doing this when you were younger? Like the classic, like what did you want to be when you grew up? Like how did it go from whatever that was to where you are now?
That's so funny. I think when I was younger, what I really wanted was probably your job. I wanted to be in like marketing. I wanted to, get out and meet people and talk to people. And, as I got older, I found out that I was actually very much more an introvert. So that whole concept, I was the extroverted introvert. So it was okay then for me to go into the world of tech writing where I could just put my headphones on and not interact with people for many hours in a day. And that was fine. But there are parts of me, I kind of go between both sides of it for sure, where, like, oh yeah, I'd love to go to this conference. And then I get there and I'm like, oh, I'm overwhelmed and all these people, and I'm exhausted. So, it's a roundabout question, but I wanted to be like you.
I can definitely see it. I think that something I've noticed in interacting with people in the world of tech comm, I've taken on the framing of ambivert. So I can be really introverted sometimes, but then in the right crowd, in the right people, like the group of people who really fill my cup, I become extremely extroverted. And I will say, tech comm people really fill my cup. I think that the community is very, very unique. And I end up making a best friend to every conference I go to.
Well, it's funny because one of my best friends at one of the first conferences I was at, we got introduced by a dude in a booth, right, who said, "Here, go meet this guy," and put us together and we ate cake together. And in fact, I have a conference call with him next week to talk about, the lessons learned when he did a migration over to Ditto. So it's like, you just don't know. And normally I was not going to be hanging out with that guy, never would have met him. So these things happen, and you can maintain. And that's probably 7, 8 years ago that I met him. So I get
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been 4 years since we first met, and this is probably, yeah, and then this is probably the first face-to-face conversation we've had since then.
It is. It is. We
Yeah.
keep like passing, like, "Hey, are you going to this event?" And it's like, "No." And it's like, "Oh, are you going to this one?" And it's like, "No." So,
Yeah. We'll
yeah.
get there eventually, one of these days.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about like as you prep for a migration to Ditta, what are some of the things that you're most concerned about?
I think I went in with this really great positive, like, yeah, we can do this. My mom will make the costumes. We'll put the show on in the barn. It's going to be great. Right. And, you're going to take this content, you're going to clean it, you'll migrate it. Boom. Instant success. And then I think what I bumped into was how we set up our content. So there's a reason why it's so difficult to manage. And it had to do with the way we were actually interacting with the unstructured frame maker. And it's where things have not changed in like 12 or 13 years. So, right, surprisingly enough, we're handling things kind of in a very old-fashioned way, and we're not necessarily using all of the cool functionality of frame maker. And that anyone who knows me knows that it's like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe Randy said that out loud, because I would never say cool FrameMaker technology or features or whatever. But we're not even there. And I think my biggest issue is, how do I take what are basically giant buckets and split them into the individual elements that we need to even be able to migrate it? And it's like that coming up with that plan, that checklist, that step by step has taken me a really long time, which is unusual. Just unusual. It's a big, scary project that way. Because things aren't identified, they're not named well, they're not numbered, they're all, just blobs. They're not even referenced, they're embedded, so you don't get that reuse functionality or anything like that. So I guess it's on the positive side. It's like, okay, we can pretty much do what we need to do. We're not really constrained by anything. So, trying to find the positive. I don't have a lot of it this week, but
I mean, I think that is a great positive because even though it is daunting, it does leave you open to be able to do whatever you want. Like, right, the possibilities are endless. And so there's a lot more freedom than having to work within a structure that's already there. So I'm excited to see where that goes, and to like learn more about that process. Maybe we'll do a once you've migrated and once you've done it, we'll do a follow-up and see how it went. But I'm gonna shift a little bit back to just general docs. And so I always like to ask, when was a moment that you realized, like, oh, docs really do matter? Like, when was a moment that it finally connected for you wherein you said, oh, this is meaningful for sure?
Interesting. I think probably an area that had the most impact for me was I worked for about 9 years at Harley-Davidson, and I was writing mostly owner's manuals. And it was where you were getting really direct input from the users. And then having the ability to kind of just compare this vast array of documents to get them aligned, which was an exercise that hadn't really occurred. And it was like looking at how what we were going to say was going to impact the user experience. And that sounds so trite, but it is so true. And we knew it because we sat literally across the aisle from the customer service department. And so they were taking the phone calls and reporting out on maybe this information was missing or something was incorrect or whatever. But getting that direct feedback is unparalleled in terms of making a difference. And most of the companies that I've worked for, I worked for tech writing companies. So it was companies who worked for a number of different clients, and that all had different types of documents and different audiences. And so the only feedback you were really getting from them was, from the reviewer, right? You weren't really getting any direct feedback. But when you get positive feedback from an end user, that's also pretty cool, right? Because you don't get that a lot either in the world of tech writing. So I highly recommend, trying to get yourself into a place where you can connect with a user, any whoever your user is, and say, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And then if you have the ability to go and fix it, it's a really great sense of satisfaction.
Absolutely. That's something that I noticed. I talk about it a lot in, I do help site assessments for people who have online documentation. And we talk about it a lot because Heretto Help has just a feedback mechanism built into it. And you'd be surprised at how much one actual feedback gets submitted. And two, when it's positive, like we have a Slack channel that has all of the updates when someone submits. And yeah, there's always stuff that's coming through that's like, hey, this was missing, or this wasn't quite clear. But sometimes you get a, hey, this was super helpful. It did exactly what I needed. And that's always a big celebration because that's exactly what it's supposed to do. So it's exciting.
Right. And I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned is happy people won't necessarily take the time to write or call or whatever. But when they're unhappy, absolutely. So you can't look at that feedback as, the true sense of the quality of your product, other than the fact that you may have opportunity to make improvement.
Yeah.
But yeah, not getting a lot of positive can be a little depressing. Like, oh man, these books are really bad. And it's like, no, they're not. They're not. Maybe they're good. And people are just so happy they don't feel the need to call, right?
Yeah,
But some of
exactly.
that comes through in brand loyalty too. So when you're working, for companies like Echo or Harley, and it's like when you have people who are buying the same thing over and over and over again, it's like it's a part of the brand. And when you are dealing and working for companies where brand is super important, you're really part of that journey. You're just usually not invited to those cool meetings where everybody gets a neat shirt and free lunch. So,
Unfortunately, you should be.
right? Everybody loves a Jimmy John's.
Everyone loves a Jimmy John's. I mean, put me in that boat 100%. So in that vein, what is like really good documentation? look like to you? Like, what are some of the like non-negotiables that you have when advising your team on writing and things like that?
Again, I'm going to come out with a really trite statement, but I'll have a little caveat at the end, which is really putting yourself in the user's shoes. But I'm going to take it a little further and say, what is the anticipated issue that caused them to open the book? Because in most cases, the user doesn't read the manual. As much as we want to believe that as soon as the box arrives, they tear it open and open the book first thing, it's like, yeah, no. Probably not. The reason that they open it is to figure something out or to learn something or to address a question. Make sure that you've addressed that question or that potential issue because that's what's going to make them call, if they can't find it. So it's like, it's always looking at it for the how do I? And I think in the modern, gosh, really aging myself here, but you kids nowadays, and all the websites that are putting in like the FAQs and the help. I mean, that's amazing. That's exactly what that is, really excels at is the how do I give me that quick hit and let me find it. Because working in the a lot of the industry that I've worked in, we have to have a book, a paper copy that goes in the box. And so once it's printed, it's printed. Right, you don't get that opportunity to get the right answer into that same customer's hands. So I'm really big into, having that sort of online ability to help them. How do I? And I think it's one of the things that's pretty cool as we delve into the world of AI, dipping our little toes. Could be one of the things that AI could be really useful to us. And again, anyone who knows me, who heard me just say AI in a positive way, was like, who is she? And what has she been drinking? Because I've been really kind of anti-AI in the world of technical publications, mostly, here's my caveat, but mostly because of the accuracy issue, that an inaccurate answer could do something very bad. And making sure that, and also making sure that we're not putting our diamonds out into the world and getting back rust, right? And which can happen when you're in a loop like that, right? And we've done a lot of work to make this and polish it and make it great. It's like we certainly don't want it to get dumbed down or misinterpreted. So yes. But AI can be our friend. And if we can have it turn our information into a shorter, more condensed version of an accurate solution, awesome.
I think a lot of people, myself included, are kind of in the same boat as you with AI. I mean, as a marketer, AI has been extremely helpful and like a small team marketer, extremely helpful, but also, I have personally been trepidatious to get super into it. And so from a purely technical communication standpoint, as like a manager, where do you see yourself landing right now? In terms of incorporating more AI, not incorporating it, testing the waters, like what do you see yourself recommending to your team in the next year?
Well, what's interesting is that the leadership of both of our parent company and my company have both been very interested in AI. And so when I went to put this idea together, it was like, well, where is AI in this environment? And really learning how companies are incorporating AI into an enclosed system like a CMS or a CCMS. It's like, okay, well, what is it doing? How is it helping? And it's like, oh, okay, that's what it's good at. It's good at finding, it's good at making connections maybe. And it's like, cool, I can totally live with that. And if we can put that in under the umbrella of AI, who doesn't want that, right? All leadership, all business leadership is like, AI, yeah. What can we do with it? I don't know. So finding an application for it, it was checking a lot of boxes. And you can cut this if you want, but that in reality, in the olden days, we called it something else. That functionality was still there, right? It was an application. It was, somebody programmed this little thing and it went and did this thing for you. And maybe it wasn't quite as all-encompassing as AI, but and that was part of the reason why I was so like anti-AI, is I would get these, sit with these phone calls with people who had these technologies that they were looking to sell us or whatever, and talking to them, and they're like, yeah, we have AI. And it's like, okay, what is it doing? And it was like doing an online grammar checker. And I was like, okay, Clippy, what? We've had that. You can call it AI, sure you can. Absolutely. I'm not going to take that away from you, but for those of us that, have been working with these things for a long time, it's like some of this isn't new. And some of it I don't know that I would classify as AI, but market it away. That's fine. That's cool. But just be careful what you're going to use it for, right?
Yeah.
So that's my sage advice from, the trench.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, that makes total sense. I feel like you're going to have a really good answer for this one, but what is the I shouldn't put that much pressure on you. I apologize. What is the hill you're willing to die on when it comes to documentation?
Oh man, there's a big part of me that wants to talk about serial commas, but because I'll be honest, I'm anti-serial comma. I think there's a time and a place. I don't think it's necessary in all cases. So there, I've said it.
Controversial.
I know. The hill I would die on. I think it would be we worry too much about things like white space and format. And while I'm the biggest geek about those things myself, I think that we really need to be looking at these technologies that are coming through where that is no longer a thing. And I get that we can't deliver everything online, that we still will be in the paper paradigm, but what difference does it make if the document doesn't maybe look as good as it does now, where we have this like bound book and it's in the 1980s sort of paradigm? It's like, what's wrong with having, a shorter document that's stapled that we're able to push out faster and not spend as much time worrying about format and heading rules. There's a huge amount of that. And even going into a new technology like a CMS, and I'm like, oh my goodness, all these rules, all these writing rules, right? And especially because we don't have a good example right now to like even give the implementation partner and say, here, make it look like this, or use these framemaker rules. It's like, yeah, we have no rules. It's just Wild West chaos over here. Do what you want. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So, I don't know if that even answered your question. The hill to die on. Don't worry about it.
It
Don't worry
did.
about it. Don't worry about what it looks like. Worry about what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what the customer needs, right? Like, they're not going to be like, wow, that was a gorgeous list, but it didn't answer my question. So kudos to that.
I
No.
like the way that they use the bullet list rather than the alphanumeric list. That was an interesting choice, but I like it. Yeah, no, they aren't looking.
No, they care
No.
if it answered their question.
And I will also say that the readability aspect is an important piece. We had a document that we took. We were trying to make a shorter, like quick start guide type document, right? And it was decided, I don't know by whom, that we would do like English, Spanish, French, English, Spanish, French, English, Spanish, French. And the thing became completely unreadable and it was really difficult to manage and all that. And I was like, stop, just do English, then Spanish, then French, right? Like every other thing. I said, like, if you've ever bought, a hairdryer or curling iron and you get that, multi-language right in a row, and all I wanted to do was know how to set the temperature, right? How do I? Yeah, it's think about the readability of it. Make it
That's a great
readable.
point. Yeah, and those are such little things that have such big impact down the road.
Yeah.
And, I think it kind of all goes back to what you were saying earlier and like putting yourself in the actual shoes of the reader and the person who's trying to figure this out.
There was a thing that we did at Harley where we put ourselves in the technician's shoes and said, "Well, why are they looking at this? The experienced technician knows how to do this procedure. What is that person looking for?" And it was like, they're looking for torque value, they're looking for special tool, they're looking for the schmooze and goos, as we call it. And it's like, so we changed the diagrams and the illustrations to show the torque values and stuff. So it's like, if you're looking at that bolt, we made it easy to find and got a lot of really positive feedback on that because and then we came up with some other things to do for the less experienced technician who didn't know how to do it, right? So we could kind of walk them through. So it was really understanding that the world of technicians is changing too, right? We have less experienced technicians, but the experienced ones are still there. We don't want to annoy them by, creating a 700-page book, right? With a bad
Yeah.
index. So
I love that. I think digging into the why is something that I notice really successful teams do really well. And having a really good pulse on their actual customers and their end users will always help them make better connections and make better choices when producing documentation. Because we're just human. We all need to know the why of what we're doing and the why of what the end user is doing, because then that helps us figure out how to serve them better. I mean, from a documentation expert to a waiter, right? Like if you know the why of your customer, you can accommodate them much better.
absolutely. It's one of the techniques we use, which was interesting. I did take a trip to Japan to meet with the Japan team earlier this year, and they were the ones who were really pushing to go to Ditta. I was like, okay. I said, but before Ditta is a solution, let's talk about what the problem is, right? So we sat down and we spent 4 days really just analyzing the problem. And one of the tools that we used was the five whys. And so we would just go through these things and then just say, well, why? Well, why? Why is it like that? Why do we have to do that? Why, how did we get here? And both of our teams, both in Japan and in North America, these things have not changed in many, many, many years. And nobody even knows why anymore. And so then it was like, well, who's empowered to make the change? Right? Who can say, okay? And that was challenging too. Right. Sorry, I kind of deviated there, but
No, that's so like I love that you're using the five whys. I think that that is a really great way to dig in. We use it in marketing all the time. That's just a big one to talk about. Like, why does someone care about a feature or functionality that we have? And we just keep digging and digging and digging with the whys. So I
go.
think it's a phenomenal tool.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting towards the end. This flew by. I love speaking with you, Randy. It's always such a pleasure. But I always end with one question, and that is if you could give any advice to anyone who's interested in the world of tech comm, what would you give them?
Oh my goodness. First, I would probably ask them why. You
Five
know, it's,
times.
yeah, and keep asking them, are you sure? because it's like when you, yeah, when you, it is a calling for sure. It's not something that you can do as a side hustle just in case. I think it would be about making sure that they have the commitment to whoever their user is, right? And it's even better if they are that user, right? Because what would you do? What would you want? Boy, that's not a great answer to that question. So I'm let me, give me like, okay, we pause
Yeah, pause and then
and
we
pause.
can. Yeah.
Okay, second answer.
Okay.
I think I would frame it around technology and really always keeping your finger on the pulse of what's coming next. It takes a long time in the world of tech pubs for new technologies to take hold. So for instance, the Ditta journey, I was doing some research on Ditta. Ditta is like 15 years old. It's like, really? And
Yeah.
we're now, it's now just really starting to become more popular. As of a few years ago, it was really difficult to find companies who had implemented Ditta. So it takes a while, but I think we can use that to the benefit of by the time it's more widely adopted, it's pretty steady, it's pretty firm, it's a pretty solid bet. It did make it easier to sell it to, for instance, my executive team to be like, this is not new technology. We're not, skating on the edge of anything here. And in fact, it's really getting us ready for the next thing, because where we are right now, we're not ready for anything else, right? And that's where
Yeah.
keeping your eye on that technology can maybe help you get ready. It's always be ready, right, for the next thing. Make sure your code is pure. Make sure your code is portable, right? And keep your matches dry.
That is perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today. I again love speaking with people in this industry, and especially my first BFF from Convex Tucson. And I hope that you have a really fun journey in this next step of your career, and that we keep in touch and you let me know how it goes.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. And I look forward to the next time we can have a conversation.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Docs, where the content's structured, but the conversations aren't. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who loves great documentation as much as we do. Until next time, keep creating content that makes a difference.